welcome you into the season-ending edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Shoftoff, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter. And with me, as always, Tara Wellman from Bird Seeds, Birds on the Black, at Tara Wellman on Twitter. The Cardinals lose today to the Cubs in a game that was meaningless. The first, you know, for two straight years, they have played in meaningless ball games, which is a little weird after 6 years or so of not having any of those kind of games. Although, Tara, I guess we got to at least give them some credit. The Cardinals took a lead on the Cubs today. They scored 5 runs against the Cubs. And when you look at the games that the Milwaukee and Los Angeles and Colorado played, the Cardinals at least showed up, which is more than the opponents for those teams did. I mean,
yeah.
I know we're grasping the silver linings there, but that's something.
I mean, at least they tried.
Yeah.
That's what I said about the Giants after Saturday's game. Can't say the same for the Giants after today's game. But no, you know, at least they tried is not great consolation, but, you know, it's something.
And that's about all we can get out of this week. I know that, I believe it was before the show last week, you and I were talking, and I said, look, Cardinals had a game and a half lead on the Rockies at that time. I said they don't often play themselves out of the playoffs. They're a team that's usually playing better that last week. There's times where they don't make the playoffs, like in 2016, where they, you know, swept the last 3 games and just didn't get any help. But they don't usually play themselves out of it. They played themselves out of it this week.
Sure did.
4 straight losses, lost 5 of 6. The only game they did win was a 2-1 game that I hope Miles Michaelis realized that the wind was blowing in, and that's why he pitched that way. But he gave up a lot of fly balls in Wrigley Field that on a different day, that result could have been a whole lot different. But one win out of that, you can't be surprised when you don't make the playoffs there, and I don't think anybody was. Before we look at the season as a whole, just this week, you know, even the possible last start of Wainwright, the last games at Busch, and the Brewers are so good, but they didn't really have to, you know, pillage the place like they did. Is this just, and I think we talked about it a little bit last week, is it just they didn't have anything left to give?
I really think it is. And it's sort of the ultimate result that we've talked about the last, I don't know, 2 months now, where we've been sort of afraid of a crash at the wrong time, because even through that August stretch where they were playing so well, they had to play that well. They had to play at that pace to put themselves in postseason contention. And all of those games are so pressure packed. They're so intense. I mean, you talk about it with pitchers, right? You talk about high stress pitches versus low stress pitches. Well, you talk about high stress games versus low stress games. That takes more out of you than a game where you casually win 12-0 or whatever it is that most of the scores were in today's games. You know, it's hard to maintain that pace, and it's hard to play up to that level for so long. And then when it comes down to the last week of the season, playing 2 teams that are probably better than you arguable ways. I know there will be Cardinals fans who will be mad at me for saying that, but the 2 teams that certainly have played better than you have all season, and having to play up to that level, not only with the pressure of the postseason being on the line, but division rivals and trying to kind of keep yourself in that conversation, man, there's so much intensity that it just looked like everyone out there was doing everything they could. They just didn't have enough left to give.
Yeah, it was, I mean, again, a lot of young players, a lot of people that may not have been deep into these, a lot of people that have not dealt with those power pressure pack situations, because I know Memphis won last year. I know Memphis had some big games. I know Memphis won this year, obviously. But there's got to be a little bit different.
They also won the division by like 35 games or something ridiculous. So it's not exactly the same pressure as trying to earn your spot.
Very true. Very true. And even though they played the, you know, the postseason games and stuff like that,
right,
it's, even then, it's still not the same feeling and the same pressure as, I mean, you want to win the division, the league, but if you don't, I don't know how many people, you know, hold that against you, you know. If right. you don't win it, you know, if you don't make the playoffs in St. Louis, people are going to hold that against you, or at least, you know, feels like it. So, it just, yeah, it just, you saw the pitching staff just didn't seem to be able to do much. The Cardinals had, except for the game on Saturday, had a lead for half an inning in the other games, and then I guess a half an inning or two, maybe an inning or two here today. They just weren't even that competitive at times, and that's sad to see.
Yeah.
There were big moments. I mean, Jed Jarko had a few times where he came up with, you know, bases loaded or whatever and just couldn't get anything done, which also, being that he didn't play today, kind of indicates that maybe he wasn't at full strength. And that's, I guess maybe that's an interesting discussion. I mean, where did Mike Shildt, you know, he rested some people today, saying that the people had been fighting through injuries and stuff like that. But, you know, we've talked about this so often. Where does that line come where 70% of Jed Jarko better than 100% of Patrick Wisdom? And I'm not a big Patrick Wisdom fan, but there's got to be some line where health is more important than, you know, a compromised talent, isn't there?
Yeah, you would think so. And, you know, there were some questionable choices made down the stretch by Mike Shildt, and I think a lot of fans were pretty frustrated with that, roster construction being one of them. For example, Jed Jarko, who was like 0 for 2 weeks, playing against a lefty when he might not be quite at 100%, Colton Wong not playing that same day, you know, because that essentially compromises multiple positions defensively, because Jairo Munoz is a much better third baseman defensively. Less than 100%, Jed Jarko is not going to move as well, especially when the injury has been leg related all season. You know, I don't know what I would love to sort of be in the mind of Mike Shildt for some of those decisions, because they seemed a little bit out of character for what we saw from him out of character in the brief experience we've had with Mike Shildt, just from what we had seen from him earlier in his tenure, and, you know, kind of just sticking with the same thing because it should work, not necessarily doing the thing that is working or might work when everything else has failed. And I don't know, some weird moments like that. I think Jed Jarko was certainly one of them, where it seemed quite obvious to everyone that he was functioning at less than 100%. And as a result of that, or perhaps just at the same time, he was not performing at the plate at all, and really came up in some key situations that could have changed the tone of multiple games over the course of the last couple of series, and just wasn't able to get anything done. So a weird call as far as he's concerned. And then, of course, you know, when Patrick Wisdom comes out in today's game and gets a big base hit, you know, the crowd goes wild wondering why he didn't get more playing time. You know, I think there's a lot to that. I mean, there's a reason that Patrick Wisdom spent so much time in the minor leagues. He doesn't have the kind of exposure to major league pitching that someone like Jed Jarko would have. I'm not necessarily saying that's a good reason for Jed Jarko to play at 70%, but I think it all at least is involved in the conversation when Mike Shildt is writing up that lineup card. And, you know, he may have gotten it wrong. For all we know, Patrick Wisdom could have struck out in the same exact situation. So it's really, really easy to try to second guess and rewrite the moment with someone else at the plate, but it's really hard to be the one who has to answer for it, that's for sure.
And I think there are times as fans, I mean, you know, we are, imagine this, not completely satisfied, but, you know, if a manager stays with a guy like Jarko, like we saw with Dexter Fowler after Shildt took over, in other situations, and we like, why doesn't he, you know, why doesn't he do something different? Why doesn't he change things up? But then, if a manager is continually changing things up, then we're saying, why these guys can't get settled in? You know, how are they supposed to have that consistency? I mean, again, Colton Wong, a guy mm-hmm. that needs to play every day. And so I think that's a fine line and a difficult one for a manager to not only to walk, but to figure out, too. And that's... Mike Shildt had such a start to his career in St. Louis that, to some degree, he may never be able to live up to that.
What? You're saying Cardinals fans establish expectations way too quickly? No.
Well, it's probably, he probably can just drop off Cardinals off that, but still,
you know,
there is that. And so if he struggles at times, this, you know, he's still going to have this learning curve. I know he's obviously had more experience than the last guy did when he came in, and he's got experience in the minor leagues. He's got a good connection with these players. There's a lot of things. I'm not suggesting that the Cardinals were too hasty in giving him that full-time job, but there are going to be growing pains, and I don't know that after seeing 22-5 that people are really interested in growing pains. And that's going to be very interesting for next year and seeing how these things go, because, you know, there's a good chance next year Dexter Fowler is going to start playing right field again. And if he starts slowly, people are going to actually probably try to burn the stadium down. So even though there is an argument for trying to give him at bats to get ready, and I know we talk about that because it's one of the things we complain about Mike Matheny, right? Is you got to get this guy right, you got to do this, you got to get this guy going, and I get that, and there's got to be some point in time where you realize it's not working, but there, where that line is difficult to know.
Yeah, and man, Dexter Fowler is such an interesting case for me because the Cardinals seemed to really believe that he could be a valuable part of their core moving forward. And it's been tough to watch, especially this season. And I know that the segment of the fan base that was ready to move on from Dexter Fowler in June isn't gonna like this logic, but there is something very real about the way that he was handled by Mike Matheny. And that's not me trying to pile on Mike Matheny at this point. We've been there, done that. It's really not necessary at this point. But there's something very real and very tangible about how bad things got between those two men. And I have to believe that eventually ended up impacting his play as well. You know, for whatever reason, however you want to slice it, he even talked about it in a recent piece, I think by Derek Gould, mm-hmm. Talking about the mental strain that was, and that, yes, while he was battling some injuries, it was more just his mental state that got in the way of his success on the field. And listen, I know that there were people who were upset about him saying that, but man, I got to give the guy credit for owning up to the fact that I was not in a good place. And it was evident, I think, to anyone who watched. I think it was probably far more evident to anyone in the clubhouse. And I have to imagine that it was sort of plaguing his teammates as well. If you've ever been in the room with two people who can't stand each other, it's going to impact the way that everything else goes in that room. So I know it might seem like an excuse. It might seem like a thing that a professional should be able to handle. But the reality is these people are just people. They are human, and they are bogged down in the same kind of drama that we get bogged down in. And I'm very curious to see what a Dexter Fowler is capable of without having to deal with that from the start, kind of coming in with a clean slate and hopefully having had a conversation with Mike Shildt that was just as transparent as it seemed to have been. The conversation seemed to have been with Derek Gould about where he was and why he was there and how he got there and where he is now. And I'm certainly of the opinion that he should get every chance to not be that guy in 2019. Now, that's not to say the Cardinals will not have, again, a bit of a backlog of outfielders, but there are ways to resolve that and whatever. You can't play everyone all the time. But Dexter Fowler certainly, I think, should get a shot and will get a shot, and no one should be surprised when, you know, he's the guy, at least heading into spring training.
Yeah, I mean, when you get in that article, I mean, there was you know, the depression word was,
yeah,
was talked about. And while it may not have quite reached to that state, it was getting pretty close. And that's pretty severe. I mean, you're right. And, you know, I'm sure there are some that would say, you gotta suck it up and deal with it. And I don't know. I mean, that is whatever the situation was. And we're not.
But that's
there.
A very real thing. You know, absolutely. That's not a matter of just not getting along with someone. If there's a real mental battle going on there, that's a very real thing. And I commend him for, you know, being willing to acknowledge that and even say it publicly, knowing that there's going to be backlash because people don't understand it and can't process that. And again, see it as an excuse. But you're right. It's a very real thing.
Absolutely. And I mean, again, it's a combination of factors. It's not all the manager. It's, yep, hey, I'm not hitting. I want to help this team, you know, and I'm not feeling like I can get into a position where I can start to hit that. It was very interesting in that same article that you were talking about that he was, I mean, hitting slightly better under Shield, you know, just a little bit over 200, but had been hitting the ball a bit better and in fact, was going around to his teammates saying, okay, spring training is over. Like,
yeah,
this is the thing that's going to go. Now, the problem is for Derek Dexter Fowler is that he needs to have a good spring next
right.
year. He can't hit 184 in Jupiter and people be excited about him hitting him on the leadoff spot or next to leadoff, you know, hitting second when the games actually matter. And, you know, Dexter Fowler could hit 1,000 in Jupiter and there's still going to be people that are going to complain about the fact that yeah. he's hitting because
he's not Tyler O'Neill.
Well, that and because there's just those people on Twitter.
Oh, well, yeah.
But, which, anyway. But that's an interesting question because, again, just like another guy that's going to get brought up a lot this winter in Brett Cecil, that's a lot of money committed to a guy that yep. hasn't done anything over the last couple of years. You can't get rid of that money. I mean, you can't. And I don't know, you know, obviously the Cardinals want to make Dexter Fowler work, and they might as well because there is no other real viable option. You're not going to get anybody to take Dexter Fowler for probably you have to pay his salary and then some to get him to go someplace else. Brett Cecil, the same way. I mean, you would have to, you know, cut him. And honestly, I'm not sure the Cardinals are really that interested in trying to rehab the Cecil image. I mean, you're right. They're very interested in Dexter Fowler continuing to maybe be that on-base guy behind Matt Carpenter. But I don't get the sense that they're all that excited about another couple of years of Brett Cecil, even if it means not paying him to stay home.
Yeah, I think the situation is a little bit different there on a couple of levels, but primarily because it's not as if there was this big drop-off from who Brett Cecil was. He just now, that's not to say he's always been as bad as he has been in his performances with the Cardinals, but you know, he was never necessarily the big name guy that was going to be the turnaround piece in the bullpen, or even necessarily, long term contract notwithstanding, the guy that they were going to build the bullpen around. The long term contracts for relievers will always baffle me a little bit because they're so volatile, and one season can be great, and the next season they'll never live up to that again. But I think as far as Brett Cecil is concerned, there just seems to be no answer. It's not an injury issue. It's not a manager overuse issue, which things, you know, we've seen that before with bullpen guys. But there just seems to be no clear indication of like a specific thing that's wrong that they can focus on and try to change. It just, nothing that he tries works. And, you know, when he becomes your mop-up guy who then can't be trusted in a blowout, you know, the options become pretty limited pretty quickly. And then when you look at all the arms the Cardinals are going to be trying to figure out what to do with over the offseason anyway, he's a piece that very quickly becomes, one, redundant, even if he is capable of getting major league outs, but two, not trustworthy enough to really invest in. And the unfortunate thing is they've already made that investment. Mm-hmm. And they may just, like you said, have to eat it and move on. And it's not like that would be the first time that ever happened in the history of baseball, and certainly not with the Cardinals. But that doesn't mean it's easy to come to that conclusion, even when it seems inevitable.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the 40-man roster, and, you know, the Cardinals have done a lot to, you know, pack that this year. They've put some guys on there that are not going to be leaving anytime soon, and most likely. And I know you got some people coming off, Bud Norris, Adam Wainwright, a couple of guys that are, you know, free agents, in some other situations that may... But, you're, you know, that's a situation where you may have to let Cecil go just to free up that spot, and you just eat the money. It's unfortunate. I mean, I had hopes for Cecil this year. Last year he kind of had his stretches where he could be good and then just be terrible, and he just didn't have a whole lot of good stretches this year. Every once in a while he'd put together two or three outings where you start thinking, well, maybe he's going to do something, and then it would blow up on him again. And you're right, I just don't see how they can trust him to do anything. With as many arms as they have, you don't keep the guy around so that you don't have to use a position player in a game. Not really exactly a role that's needed too much. So, I think that's going to be very interesting to see what they do there as well. We should talk about the fact that Adam Wainwright made, you know, and we talked a lot about Wainwright last week after his second very good start at Busch Stadium. He went out against the Cubs and wasn't as good. 4 runs, 5 innings, which is exactly what he had against the Pirates. And I don't know, Tara, if it's telling or not that the two starts that he did very well in came at Busch Stadium versus, you know, struggling on the road, which has kind of been one of the things that Wainwright's had in the past. I don't know. Is that just the ups and downs that you're going to get with a guy like Adam Wainwright at this point in his career? Or did it really have something to do with being in front of the fans?
As much as Adam Wainwright loves the fans in St. Louis, I certainly would not want to suggest that that had nothing to do with it. But I also would say that, one, it's a pretty small sample size after he came back and was supposedly, air quotes, healthy again. But it's also just, I don't know, I feel like it's almost the Adam Wainwright story right now. And if he wants to continue pitching, this sort of inconsistency is what he's going to be up against. Just because he's not 25 and he's not going to recover as well every time. And there are going to be, you know, outings where he goes out and has to throw more pitches, or he has to work a little harder, or he tweaks something a little bit, and the next time he's not going to feel quite right. And, you know, it doesn't seem like that was the case in this last start in Chicago. Of course, you know, you take every Adam Wainwright quote with a little bit of a grain of salt. But according to him, he felt like he was going to go out and pitch 9 innings. I think that attitude, and listen, I love that about Adam Wainwright. I've said this before. It's really hard for me to be critical because Wainwright's my guy, and has been really for the entirety of my baseball fandom when I was really invested in the team and in the players on an individual level. So it's hard for me to kind of step back and be like, okay, look, this is a thing that Wainwright does that seems great on the surface, but it's probably not really that great. And that is that he has this mentality that, you know, if he wakes up in the morning and feels pretty good, that he's going to be able to go out and throw 9 innings. And that sounds like this really great competitive, you know, bulldog mentality. But it's, I feel like it almost hurts him in the long run. And I want to make a comparison that may not be fair. And, you know, if by some weird miracle Adam Wainwright ever hears this, he'll probably block me on Twitter for it. But I was listening to Miles Michaelis talk about his approach and his attitude after his 8 innings the other day. And it's interesting hearing him talk about, you know, I just go out there and I throw one pitch. And then I see what Yadi puts down and I throw one pitch. And then I see what he puts down and I throw one pitch. And then you hear Adam Wainwright post-game talk about, man, I went out there and I thought I was going to throw 9 innings. And I feel like sometimes he gets a little bit ahead of himself in that competitiveness where he wants to go out and be that guy. And he might fare better to think about one pitch and then think about the next pitch. And that's, you know, there's a lot of assumption there. And I've said it before, I'm sure I'll say it again. I hate making assumptions about particularly the mindset of a professional athlete, because I'm not one and I've not been in his shoes, and I don't know where his head goes. But it was just an interesting direct comparison of, you know, an Adam Wainwright who has been so much to this team, who goes out and legitimately believes he's going to pitch 9 shutout innings. And that might be what Miles Michaelis thinks he's capable of, but the explanation of the mentality was pretty striking as far as the contrast there. All of that to say, you know, I think it's really hard still to put any sort of gauge on what made a difference for Adam Wainwright, why he was good one day and not the next. You know, he's not exactly been great over the course of his career in most of the, I don't want to say the biggest moments, but in a number of big moments, whether it's postseason or whatever, he hasn't quite lived up to that standard that he sets for himself, because in my mind, he thinks he's going to go out and pitch 9 innings every time, which is probably a thing that a lot of starters think, but it doesn't, it's a little bit far removed from reality, especially at this point. And I'm not sure that's helpful to him in this process of trying to figure out what he has left, if anything.
Yeah, that's fair. I will say that he does have an ERA of 2.88 at home and 3.8 on the road. So
it's not something to that.
It's not completely out of left field. I mean,
right.
He has,
no.
You know, 10 wins more at home. He has pitched better at Busch, which is going to make for an interesting decision next year. I mean, this is the thing we've talked about a lot. You know, a lot of us have kind of just assumed as the season went on, especially when Adam was gone for so much of it, that Adam Wainwright was going to retire at the end of the year, that he obviously had nothing left to give, that he was, you know, he obviously hasn't been the same since that Achilles injury in 2015. And last I checked, he is not getting any younger. Again, Adam, sorry, nobody is. I wish I was. But, you know, what did the Cardinals do? I mean, this is the... It's not the biggest question of the offseason, because one way or another, it probably doesn't make the hugest of impacts on 2019, no matter what they do. But I think it's the one that everybody's going to be talking about because it is Adam Wainwright. And you look at that, can the Cardinal fans adjust to Adam Wainwright pitching in a different uniform? Because it doesn't sound like he's quite ready to retire yet. I mean, we kind of thought that he would be to that point, and you know, 2 out of these 4 starts. I mean, and even the other two starts weren't terrible. They're not great. But they're enough that could keep him in the big leagues. And if that's the case, and that's what he wants to do, you know, if the Cardinals don't necessarily have a good spot for him, does he go somewhere else?
I think this is a really fascinating predicament, you know, if you can remove the emotion from it a little bit, and not even remove it, because that's part of this, right? I mean, that's Adam Wainwright and Yadier Molina are Cardinals baseball for a lot of my generation of Cardinals fans, right? This is, these are the guys that they think of. They're the guys that are on the posters. They're the guys that are the face and the heart and the soul of the team. Not that factors in necessarily to a contract, but it factors into kind of how you go about approaching the situation. I mean, there's a level of respect for everything that Adam Wainwright means to St. Louis that plays a role in at least how these conversations go. I also think there's something to what St. Louis means to Adam Wainwright that factors into these conversations and what he wants. And if he's so convinced of his capability on the field that he's willing to go wherever he has to go to prove that, or if St. Louis is as integral to his story as you know, anything else is, and he's willing to maybe play a different role than he would somewhere else. It's, again, you know, we talk about these athletes and how they have to just go do their job and how it's a business, but they're still people and there's still emotion involved and there's still history there and there's still, you know, pieces of that have to be considered and handled appropriately. So I have no doubt that Adam's going to try to pitch next year. I don't know how that fits into the picture for the Cardinals. And we've talked about it already. There are so many young arms that all of a sudden John Mozeliak got a look at firsthand, comparing them to other major leaguers and where their talent fits in. It's going to be hard for Adam Wainwright to earn one of those spots with this team. And you certainly don't want a charity contract or a roster spot that's because of who he is. And I don't think Adam wants that either. But I do think it's going to be hard for him to earn a spot on the pitching staff for the St. Louis Cardinals. I just don't know. I think it's also going to be hard for the Cardinals to let Adam Wainwright walk.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, when this contract was signed, 2 years ago now, that's what we thought we were getting with the Yadier Molina contract. Mm-hmm. We thought, okay, Yadi's going to have another year or so, he's going to start to transition out, and by the end of that contract, it's going to be way overpay, but it keeps Yadi in St. Louis.
But unlike everyone else in the world, Yadier Molina doesn't age.
Apparently not. Apparently not. And you saw that stat this weekend that he has caught, I think, 100 or plus games in 14 straight years, which is a major league record. And most of that is not 101, 105. A lot of that is 120, 125. Right. You know, if he hadn't, you know, he caught over 100 games this year and he missed a month because of all. Never mind. But.
Something happened?
What? Something okay. that we continually block out of our minds. But an injury that probably, you know, could have kept somebody out the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. You know, Yadi's doing squats in like 2 weeks. So, you know, so that's what they thought they were getting there. And, you know, I don't know that it's beyond them to give some sort of, you know, if Adam Wainwright wants to pitch in St. Louis, if he wants to go for one more year, and if he's willing to do it for $5 million, which is significantly less than he's getting paid this year, obviously, I don't know that the Cardinals don't do that. You know, there's this idea, and we've talked about it a bit, that, you know, Tyson Ross has done a very fine job for the Cardinals since he came over. I've really enjoyed seeing what he has done. He's been able to, for the most part, get out of jams that other people have created. But there's no guarantee that, one, Tyson Ross can do that again next year, and two, that Tyson Ross doesn't want to be a starter someplace else. And if you can't bring Tyson Ross back, if Adam Wainwright's open to being that kind of pitcher, a guy that makes a start when you need to space some people out, or, you know, is able to come in the fourth inning or fifth inning and pitch the rest of the game or whatever it may be necessary, if he's willing to do that, I don't have a problem with the Cardinals trying that one more time. And if nothing else, you know, Albert Pujols comes to St. Louis next year. If you don't have, I mean, if you can put Albert Pujols, Yadier Molina, and Adam Wainwright on the same field, I think you want to do that.
Gotta
so
do
unless
it.
The Angels are going to sign him and bring him in, I mean, that's really your only chance. I don't know. I mean, the money is not an issue.
Right.
The roster spot is, and how he's going to be used. And I don't know. That's going to be a fascinating thing for this winter, and seeing what Adam Wainwright wants and what the organization wants. Because for all the talk of this organization being an analytics-driven organization, of being able to make the tough calls like had happened with Albert and things of that nature, and even Matt Holliday, they have their soft spots, and they have their blind spots even, and I'm not sure Adam Wainwright's not one of those. So, I don't know. It'll be kind of interesting to see. You know, you look at the year, you wonder about next year. you've got guys like Jack Flaherty, who kind of hit a wall there, it looks like, at the last of it. You got a lot of young pitchers. Austin Gomber pitched today, didn't necessarily do well either. But are the Cardinals going to, like you said, and we kind of talked about this beforehand, I don't think we've really gotten into it here on the show, that John Mozeliak really wanted to, probably more than anything, more than even trying to make the playoffs, wanted to evaluate these young guys and see what they have, because they've been stockpiling outfielders and pitchers like firewood. They've decided it was about time to start burning that stuff. What do you think John Mozeliak takes out of the second half into his work in the winter?
Yeah, I do sort of have this running working theory, if you will, that this second half, the Cardinals getting to where they were part of the playoff picture at all, was kind of just the bonus for the work that John Mozeliak really wanted to do, and that was making the wholesale changes that he did, in specifically as far as the pitching staff is concerned, but then, you know, and also in relation to Harrison Bader and Tyler O'Neill, and even seeing Adolis Garcia at the end of the year, and some of the opportunities there. Look, I've been critical of John Mozeliak in the past for his unwillingness to utilize all of these prospects as essentially currency on the major league market and turn them into the assets they need in other places on the team, whether it's a big bat or a guy in the bullpen or whatever. I sort of have this idea that this second half is kind of what John Mozeliak has wanted to do for a long time, maybe not all at once, but nonetheless, inserting these young guys into real major league scenarios so that he can get a good look at them, like I said earlier, major leaguer to major leaguer, see where they fit, see where their holes are, see where they, you know, maybe can't match up or where they don't fit into the overall puzzle for the Cardinals as they move forward. I don't think that he really had a manager on the field who was going to utilize those guys in a way that allowed them to be properly evaluated until Mike Schilt. And, you know, you bring Mike Schilt into that role, and he knows a lot of these guys. He's familiar with what they're capable of. He can put them into situations where they can succeed or fail based on their skill set and where they are at this stage in their career, and give John Mozeliak a real solid evaluating period before he has to go out and make decisions about where the holes really are for this team and where the young talent just needs another year of polishing before they'll be ready to carry it all the way through the season. So as far as what that means for the offseason based on the results of this year, I feel like one of two things could happen. I do think that this was by design a chance for Mo to sort of measure up where these prospects are on a major league scale, as opposed to just sort of keeping them in this holding pattern in Memphis until there was an absolute necessity, and then seeing them in such limited appearances that you kind of, well, you become Carson Kelly. So this was a good opportunity to create that window for some of these guys to prove their value, not necessarily prove that they're 100% where they need to be, but to make their case for being on the major league roster next year, also for kind of finding out where those holes really are. The flip side of that could be, and I know that there are some fans who are concerned about this, is that Mo will look at this team realizing that he made these changes, there was this huge youth movement, let them sort of take on these leadership roles that got them essentially one game from the postseason, and well, then that maybe we're good enough as it is, and we don't have to go out and spend money, we don't have to go out and trade any of these guys, we don't have to, you know, fill in the blank to make ourselves better, because we were this close, pretty successful after the managerial change, after the bullpen changes. And these young arms are only going to get better. At least that's sort of the, I think, overriding fear of Cardinals fans on Twitter in the last couple of days, is that this will sort of allow the Cardinals front office to feel comfortable with what they have, as opposed to stepping out of their comfort zone to really emphatically make this team better. While I think that there's certainly that potential, I also think that This is the third year in a row that they haven't made the playoffs. The status quo clearly isn't good enough, as not only the Cubs continue to be successful, but the Brewers have passed them up as well. So there's a lot more to it. There's a lot more at stake, I think. And while I do think there's this sort of grander plan of getting a chance to see all these young guys in the second half, I still would like to believe that there's sort of a phase two to that plan, and that is figuring out what works and what doesn't to make this team competitive in the NL Central again.
And that's the kicker. I saw that somebody put up a tweet today, and you know, we focus on the fact that they were just short of the playoffs a lot of times, but you know, they finished what, eight or so games out of the division lead this year, and that's pretty standard. They're missing out on the wild card, but they're not even that competitive for the NL Central crown since 2015. I mean, was it 16 or 17? They were tied with the Cubs very late, and then kind of things fell off. But for the most part, with this Cubs resurgence, and now with the Brewers and, you know, Mr. Almost Triple Crown, Christian Yelich, which, that got to say, that kind of snuck up on me until
yeah.
I was like, what? Christian Yelich almost has a Triple Crown? But, I mean, and you're gonna, I mean, and they've got Christian Yelich for five more years. And
yep.
I know that's going to be a rehashed discussion of, you know, the Cardinals should have got him over Marcell Ozuna, but those are two different things. I mean, they wanted to not get shut out, and Yelich was going to be the last one to go if he went.
And also, I mean, the reality is they didn't.
Yeah.
They didn't get him. So yeah. Move on and figure out the next thing that's going to make you competitive with a team that has Christian Yelich, because
absolutely.
He's likely going to be the NL MVP. And, you know, yeah, the Cardinals have some interesting young arms, but they don't have a Christian Yelich, and they haven't had in years, and that continues to be a part of their problem. So you're right. They've making the playoffs is one thing, but when you're the third team in your division and you're 5, 6, 7, 8 games back, you know, that becomes a pretty prominent complaint as you're looking at what you can do to get better. Yeah, the Cardinals, do I think the Cardinals could be relatively successful with this team next year under Mike Schilt? Sure. I'm not sure relatively successful is a standard you want to set for yourself when you've watched the Chicago Cubs and the Milwaukee Brewers sort of vault themselves to the top of the division in the last couple of years by having that marquee player.
Yeah. As some people have pointed out, it does feel like the front office is focus has shifted from making the World Series or making a deep run into October to let's get to October and see
right.
what happens. I don't think that they're doing that. I don't think they're deliberately trying to get the wild card. You know, I don't think they're trying to, you know, cut corners and, oh, if it works, it's great. I think they wanted to win the division. I think that they feel like they're putting out a team that can. It just hasn't worked out yet. And, you know, as we kind of go a little long here, but there are going to be questions, I think, this offseason. And I think it's somewhat fair to start asking, why did Luke Voit hit so many home runs in New York when he didn't in St. Louis or didn't get much of an opportunity? You know, why did Tommy Pham hit 340 or whatever he did for Tampa Bay when he hit 240 here? Why did Greg Holland give up 2 earned runs in his entire time in Washington when he gave up that many, I think, in his first, you know, appearance in St. Louis? Not to say that, you know, the Cardinals got some value for these guys back, and some of these prospects we'll have to wait and see if they pan out. But we're not quite used to that. Were you kind of used to John Mozeliak trading somebody off and them not being heard from again? And then you could even go back to the Stephen Piscotty trade, mm-hmm. which is something completely different. But it kind of goes along the same way. I don't think they expected Stephen Piscotty to have the year that he had out in Oakland. Randall Grichuk had a fairly strong year in Toronto, though I don't know that really fits into all this. But, you know, was it the Cubhouse culture? Is it them not having a good idea of what they have? I don't know, but it's very interesting to see a guy, especially a guy like Luke Voigt, to go, which we always knew he had power, and now apparently his grandmother is going to be bankrupt. But
poor Grandma Joan.
It's tough to be Grandma Joan. But it is. It's. I think it's fair to ask. I mean, we knew he had power. He never got much of a chance here, and that's to somewhat fairness because of Carpenter and others like that. But again, could this have happened in St. Louis? And if not, why not?
Yeah, you know, it's part of this much larger discussion, I think, and I sort of alluded to it earlier, where I've been critical of how John Mozeliak and company seem to evaluate their own talent. In many cases, it's because I've been critical because I feel like they overvalue their own prospects. In these cases, it kind of seems like they either didn't know what they had or there was some sense of, you know, well, what took you so long to get this guy into this position? You know, I do think that there's something to Stephen Piscotty and Randall Grichuk and the down years that they had prior to being traded, because those guys were supposed to be the core going forward. You know, if Stephen Piscotty was what he should have been, that changes the dynamic of who the core of this team is moving forward. You know, they've had a number of players like that over the last couple of years. Moral of the story is don't sign long-term contracts. But the point, to your point, it is frustrating to see Luke Voigt then go and be hitting third between Judge and Stanton or something ridiculous like that for the Yankees, who are now a postseason team. So Luke Voigt went from being a spare part at Memphis to being a real threat in the American League postseason. And I mean, that's cool for him, but it's hard to see that happen when we didn't really get a good look at that with him in St. Louis. As far as Greg Holland is concerned, I think there's got to be something to the pressure he felt in St. Louis, or the negativity surrounding that experience as a whole, where, you know, he kind of boxed himself into a corner where he couldn't make one wrong move, or all of a sudden the entire city of St. Louis had turned against him yet again. So I feel like there's something to going to a new place. Even, you know, with the Nationals, they were out of the postseason picture relatively shortly after that, but he still was able to make an impact, maybe because there wasn't that stigma, there wasn't that pressure, there wasn't that overwhelming dark cloud every time he stepped into Busch Stadium and had flashbacks of his very first appearance there. I don't know, that one's a little hard for me to try to pinpoint because, well, I don't watch a lot of Nationals games, but it is difficult to see those guys move on from St. Louis, make big contributions to their new teams, and then have the Cardinals miss out on the playoffs by a couple of games. But, you know, we were talking about this earlier too. You take any one of those Greg Holland blown saves, and all of a sudden you're looking at the Cardinals in a different situation, maybe continuing their season after tonight. So it's easy to look back and, as I said earlier, kind of rewrite history with what could have happened. It's harder to sort of figure out why, and that's the predicament that the front office is in, because, you know, they are in a position of strength as far as prospect talent is concerned, but you gotta gamble correctly to keep the right pieces there so that you don't get burned by it in the long run.
And I mean, to some of the degree, and this kind of goes back a little bit to what John was saying, like, might want to do this offseason. Do you listen to the fan base, or do you stick to the plan that you think is best? Because, again, you've got that other dimension with Stephen Piscotty's mother, but even if it wasn't for that, even if Stephen Piscotty had just had the year he had last year and there wasn't any particular reason for it, the Cardinals would have been pressured to get rid of him anyway. To yep. make a move, they had to be pressured to some degree to make a move like getting Marcell Ozuna, and once you do that, then, you know, you have to start moving other pieces. And, you know, again, maybe that's because the fans are not patient enough. It's a difficult thing to figure out, because sometimes you need to be patient, and sometimes the player's just not good and you want to move on. Where you got to, and you got to trust that the front office knows what they're doing. And like I said, sometimes maybe they don't.
I do think, not to just continue going on here, because I feel like we're on a record pace here.
Yeah.
But you know, there's a lot of things. A lot of things.
We're not doing a show next week, so this is like double edition.
Exactly, right? Exactly. But I do think it's valuable to remember that the Cardinals went full in on Giancarlo Stanton. They went there. They went after that. They did everything they thought they could do, and Stanton just didn't want to play in St. Louis. Now, the reasons for that, I think, are a whole other conversation as far as, you know, what you do and how you analyze that reality and try to change that for any potential free agents you might go after this offseason. But it's not – and even in other cases where the Cardinals finished second and we all complained about it, it's not necessarily for lack of trying. It's not like they haven't gone out and made an attempt to fill that hole, to bring in a marquee guy, to go out and get the starting pitcher that they wanted. It's not for lack of trying. It's just, you know, at some point, trying's not actually good enough if you never actually make the sale. It will be interesting, I think. Yes, the Cardinals ended up with Ozuna, and they didn't end up with Yelich, and that seems like it's going to be a thing that's never going to end, but Ozuna was hurt all year, so that sort of played into that as well. The point is, the Cardinals went after the guy that they wanted, and they offered him as much as anyone else did, really, except for the location, except for the bright lights, except for the coast, except for whatever it is, the nightlife, I don't know. Whatever Giancarlo Stanton wanted, he was going to get. And what he wanted was not St. Louis. So maybe the Cardinals spend some time in the offseason working on their pitch. because, you know, if you want a guy like Machado, which is likely not going to happen, if you want a guy like Bryce Harper, which, as I mentioned the other day, would generate the greatest, like, hair, muscle, bro-ness in the outfield of all time with a combination of Bryce Harper, Harrison Bader, and Tyler O'Neill at any time that might happen. But it's not like they can't go out and make that same sort of attempt this offseason. It's just a matter of whether or not they can get the job done, whether or not they can seal the deal. And that's what has come back to haunt them every year. Quite honestly, well, really, I mean, since Matt Holliday left, I think you could even push it back further than that to the Albert Pujols days of not really having that marquee guy that can be the game changer. And that's, as much as we want to talk about the pitching, as much as we want to talk about the bullpen, that was literally in flux from day one. again, a whole nother conversation. We could do a whole show on just the bullpen this year. That kind of move is what will satisfy the fan base. So you kind of have to, again, look at the Giancarlo Stanton offer, see that they were willing to go that far, and then, you know, hope that they are able to chase that down again this year without, you know, costing more than makes sense in the long run.
And, you know, everybody is going to, or a lot of Cardinal fans, are going to immediately write off Machado or Harper. And let's be fair, there's a better than even chance that they're not coming to St. Louis, but I also feel like this may be the offseason that the Cardinals say, look, this is our once-a-decade time to get a guy like Machado, like Harper, who is young, who can be that core piece that we have been desperately searching for. It's going to cost us money, but no prospects. They could make a significant play. Now, they very well may not. They may say, look, we can, you know, we're not going to spend $300 million, $400 million on one guy when that guy bats four times a game, plays the defense, but, you know, baseball is that team game. It is harder to, except for maybe a starting pitcher, get the same impact as a quarterback or a, you know, a basketball player that, you know, can have the ball in his hands all the time. So, I mean, you could see that argument, but I still feel like, maybe it's just because I'm a homer or a very optimistic, I feel like the Cardinals could be players in this if they have determined that one of those two guys is the kind of guy that can be that core piece for them that they can keep searching for.
And I know there are a lot of people who will say that the Cardinals have too many outfielders as it is. Why would you go out and bring in Bryce Harper? First of all, if you can bring in a franchise-changing player, you do it.
Right.
You figure out the rest of that later. Second of all, yes, they do. But you're going to have to move pieces for Machado, too. So it's not like either one of them comes in to sort of this plug-and-play role where they don't already have someone lined up to play the position. The other thing that I would add without getting too far off the tracks here is that, yes, they have the money to spend. They're also now looking at this whole group of young players that they're not going to have to pay a lot of money for a number of years yet. And then even if you look at Ozuna, if he doesn't become, a key piece to their puzzle moving forward, he'll only be around for another season. There are, there are options. The point is there are options. The Cardinals could go do it if they could get it done and if they could convince that big free agent, whoever it might be, that this is the time. This is the time to come to St. Louis and to try to, bring back that championship caliber team to the city of St. Louis. I mean, if they want help writing up a sales pitch, I am all there. But because they have options and if you have the chance to bring in a guy like that and you don't because you're not sure where he'd play, then I think you're doing it wrong.
Although you could make the argument that that's exactly what they did with Josh Donaldson. Because, again, injury concerns, you didn't know what you were going to get. But you had a former MVP that was there for just money.
Yeah.
And a guy that, could have probably helped in the last 2 or 3 weeks.
And a lot of people think they did that wrong.
Right, exactly. And maybe they look at that and say, we did that wrong. Let's fix this.
Yeah.
Or, there's also the idea of let's stick to the plan. Well, and I get that, and I'm for that. I think that if you've got a good plan, you stick with it no matter what, irrational people or podcasts are saying. But, there comes a point where you've got to make sure that's the right plan. And if you keep having setbacks to it, it's time for a new plan.
And if your plan keeps dropping you further back in the division, right.
Yeah.
It may be time to reanalyze the plan.
Yeah. Because while Cincinnati is not likely to be good anytime soon, and the Pirates seem to be slipping away, even with that Chris Archer deal, which I gotta say, Tara, I'm kind of glad they didn't do.
Yeah, I'm all right with acknowledging that.
Yeah, I know that was a point of campaigning for you, but we'll kind of ignore that for now.
I'm not always right.
Yeah, no, that was Tara's one time to be wrong this season. She's good. Now we'll start again next year. But anyway, those teams are not necessarily going to be there, but the Cubs are probably got at least a couple more years in their run, I would think. And the Brewers, depending on their pitching, should be there. I mean, the Cardinals are not a favorite. They're not the favorite for the wild card. They're a third place team. And when you look at the Cardinals and you think they're a third place team, things need to change.
Time for a new plan.
Right. So, speaking of plans, there's a segue.
Look at
there.
That.
Every once in a while.
Teed it up.
Tara and I, again, as we referenced, we will not do a show next week. Tara has gotten into that time of the year where she travels all over, not quite the globe, but at least the country, it feels like, doing non-baseball stuff, which is really a waste of her talents. But, what are you going to tell her? She just,
if you can figure out a way for me to make money not during baseball season, I will talk about baseball all day, every day.
I can't figure out a way to make money during baseball season.
Yeah, well.
So, you're asking the wrong person. But anyway, Tara's going to miss at least next week, probably the week after. So we'll come back at you some point in time in October. And again, if you're a regular listener to the show, you kind of know we take a lot of time in November, December, January off. There's not as much going on. Obviously, if the Cardinals make a trade or make a signing, we'll probably be around. We'll be around during winter meetings. probably, you know, definitely then winter warm up, we start kind of gearing up a little bit more. But so stay subscribed on iTunes or wherever you're at. If you aren't subscribing, do that, because then you'll be able to get a show when we pop up. Obviously, follow Tara on Twitter, Tara Wellman. Follow me on Twitter, C70, and we will drop links when we do shows. But until we meet with you again, that is Tara, and I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey, Cardinals fans, thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.